ओम ज्ञान त्रिरंध्रस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Translation followed by commentary by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My sisters, my mother's sisters and their husbands and other affectionate relatives must be assembled there. So, if I go, I shall be able to see them, and I shall be able to see the flapping flags and the performance of sacrifice by the great sages. For these reasons, my dear husband, I am very much anxious to go. Purport. As stated before, the tension between the father-in-law and son-in-law persisted for a considerable time. Sati, therefore, had not gone to her father's house for a long while. Thus, she was very anxious to go to her father's house particularly because on that occasion her sisters and their husbands and her mother's sisters would be there. As is natural for a woman, she wanted to dress equally to her other sisters and also be accompanied by her husband. She did not, of course, want to go alone. Tatra svasrir me nanu bhartri samita matri svasri klinadhyam chamataram drakshe chirot kanta mana maharshibhir uniyamanam cha mridadharadhvajam. My sisters, my mother's sisters and their husbands and other affectionate relatives must be assembled there. So if I go, I shall be able to see them, and I shall be able to see the flapping flags and the performance of the sacrifice by the great sages. For these reasons, my dear husband, I am very much anxious to go. Who's speaking? To? In which context? She wanted to go to the sacrifice. Which sacrifice? All right, okay, thank you. You brought me up to date. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, that's it. No need of any class. Everyone chanted Hare Krishna already. Should we have a class also? I think so. The purpose of the class is to enthuse us to chant Hare Krishna and to let us know why we're chanting Hare Krishna and to give us the right mood for chanting Hare Krishna. Otherwise, we can be chanting Hare Krishna and thinking of everything else in the universe except Krishna. We are reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam Shukamukha Damrita Drava Sangyatam. It is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge, which has become even sweeter by coming from the mouth of Shukdev Goswami. Therefore, Pibhata Bhagavata Rasamalayam Mahuraho Rasika Asika Huvi Bhavukaha. Therefore, Vyasadev enjoins us to go on drinking the bhakti ras, which is exuding from the mouth of Srila Shukadev Goswami. Go on drinking that up until the point of death or the point of liberation, or just go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is discussing the highest bhakti ras, and here in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is discussion of family problems, which doesn't seem to be much to do with bhakti ras. Seems to me that many people, they take to bhakti because of family problems. And then, oh, that's a major contributing factor. The four kinds of people, pious people that come to bhakti. The first one that is mentioned is artha, artha, which means distressed. Artha, arti is, artha means money. So those who desire money, so artha means distressed. And family life, as we learn from Srimad Bhagavatam, is the cause of so much distress. Although due to the power of Maya, we think that it will be the source of great happiness. The wedding is a celebration because people think now they will live happily. They may live happily. Happy family life means it's not as distressful as it could be. Even if there's no, here we see there's tension between the father-in-law and son-in-law, which puts the wife or daughter under tremendous stress, and she ends it up by suicide, which is common in the modern age also, with the dowry tension. The family from one side is pressing, and family on the other side doesn't want to give, and she may commit suicide. So it puts her under tremendous stress, and we find those who are sannyasis in our Krishna Conscious Movement, they know how so many people come to tell them and say, oh, I have so many family problems. And whether or not sannyasis should act as marriage advisors is another question. But this, it's perennial, means it's ongoing. It's nothing new. Of course, in the modern age, there are more family problems than in previous ages, because at least in India, people used to marry, and of course, marriage is, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, a concession for sense gratification. But they married with the, there was a strong sense of dharma in this country. And even in other countries, there was a strong sense of religion. And even in the Western countries, divorce was unheard of. What to speak of in India? Actually, there's no real word in Sanskrit for divorce. They invented a word, vivaha vicheid, but there's no such word. Otherwise, the word they use in Hindi is talak, which is a Urdu word. It's not part of the original Indian culture. People didn't know what it was. So they married for the sake of dharma. The wife is called Sahadharmini. And there are various rules of dharma to be followed. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for showing the way to the supreme dharma. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidhati. The highest dharma is that which is unmotivated devotional service to the transcendent Lord. In other words, this bhakti dharma is nothing to do with this material world. That bhakti must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to fully satisfy the self. So the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is bhakti ras, which comes from ahaituki bhakti. Ahaituki apratihata adhoksaja bhakti. Then why in the Srimad Bhagavatam is there so much discussion of family affairs and material affairs, and it seems like that. Of course, the family of Lord Shiva is not an ordinary family, because Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. These are all great persons. Even Daksha is a great person. He's a very pious person. You don't become a Prajapati unless you're very pious. So pious means to execute activities which are in relationship to Lord Vishnu. His pious activities, Daksha, they were not on the platform of Ahaituki Apratihata Adhokshaja Bhakti. But he must have followed Karma Kanda very strictly for many lifetimes, or performed many austerities, which it's all in Vedic culture, the Karma Kanda, it's all centered around Lord Vishnu. Although it's not the same as Shuddha Bhakti or pure Bhakti, because there's the motive there is not primarily to satisfy Lord Vishnu simply for his sake. It's not Krishnartha Kila Cheshta. Shuddha Bhakti means all endeavors should be for the satisfaction, simply for Krishna. Whereas Karma Kanda means Madarte Akila Cheshta, everything done for me, and Krishna can help me. Not Tadarte. Actually, the phrase used there in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Tadarte Akila Cheshta, Akila Cheshtitam. For that purpose, and that is, what is that purpose? Krishnarte, for Krishna. That's given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there's a different, it may be practically the same activities, but in Karma Kanda and Shuddha Bhakti Dharma, there is a different motivation. But nevertheless, Daksha is a very pious person. He's about to diminish his stock of pious activities by insulting Lord Shiva. He thought that because he was so pious that he was greater than Lord Shiva, and he didn't recognize Lord Shiva's exalted position. It is difficult to recognize, isn't it? I mean, if someone walked into this temple holding a trishul and naked with ashes smeared all over his body and some snakes around him, he wouldn't be allowed in. But Lord Shiva's like that. He looks like a rejected person. So if Lord Shiva dresses like that, that's glorious. If anyone else does like that, it's inglorious, because Lord Shiva is meant for following, not for imitating. But he is also known as Bhutanath, Bholanath, Pashupatinath. He has all these names because he is the leader of the persons who are completely in tamagun. So the best way to follow Lord Shiva is to join ISKCON, put Gauriya Vaishnava Tilak on and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That will please him immensely. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has seen Narad Muni playing his bina, Narad Muni bhajai bina, Radhika Ramana Name. Then Panchabadane Shaghana Nache. In hearing that, Lord Shiva with his five heads is dancing very happily. So he's also very happy to join this Sankirtan movement. But from external appearances, Lord Shiva, he's not very easy to understand. All the great personalities. Krishna, he's also not easy to understand. He's not easy to understand anyone. They have this science of psychology and they try to understand why people are working in different ways and acting in different ways. It's not easy to understand anyone. What to speak of great personalities. So Daksha, he misunderstood. Sati, she didn't misunderstand. But Daksha, he made his mistake was not only that he didn't recognize Lord Shiva, but he didn't follow the basic rules. What to speak of Lord Shiva's position can properly be understood not by considering as Bhutanath or Bholanath, but by considering him as Vaishnavanang Yatha Shambhu, as the greatest Vaishnava. Therefore, from that position one can understand him. But even if one doesn't understand him from that, that is understanding him from the position of Param Dharma or Atma Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma. But even from the perspective of Lokik Dharma, Sadharan Dharma, Lord Shiva was to be respected and accommodated as the son-in-law. Because when the son-in-law visits his wife's paternal home, he's respected. So that's the proper understanding. Of course, there may be some tension, like there's tension here. But these rules of dharma, of ordinary dharma, are there to help regulate that tension. In the modern age, people don't follow these rules, and there are so many problems. Regulate that tension means that the wife is... Just yesterday I was reading that if the wife sees her husband, she worships him on the same level as the Supreme Lord. If the Shudra respects the Brahmin on the level of the Supreme Lord, if the disciple respects the Guru on the same level as the Supreme Lord, then by doing that, the Supreme Lord himself will be pleased. And they can... One will become purified by this and one can go to the planet of the Supreme Lord, of Vishnu. So, these rules are there. Some people may say, well, it's very oppressive, but it's a regulatory system. Apart from other considerations, it's a regulatory system, because otherwise, between conditioned souls in this material world, there's always stress. There's always tension. So the rule is that respect the husband. It could have been given that the husband should be submissive to the wife, but it's not. Instead it said that women who are chaste, who are submissive to their husbands, they are respected, they are worshipped. So there's provision that women, they, in the family, they take a socially subordinate role to their husband, but at the same time, they're protected and respected. And the relationship, of course, we don't so much hear about father-in-law and son-in-law tension. It's usually the mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. That's famous, isn't it? What is it? Bahu Shwas. Sas Bahu. It's famous. It's not only in India. So the modern solution to that problem is that they don't live together, because the young girls, they won't tolerate to follow what the mother-in-law says. But the result of that is that their own children in the next generation, they also won't want to follow. And then what you find in the Western countries is mostly all the old women, because they usually live older, longer than the men, they end up in a home for old people waiting to die with no one to love them, no one to look after them. So in the name of independence, it's too much. I can't live with my mother-in-law. So because we're not willing to sacrifice and adjust, then we all end up alone. And we can't adjust with our husband or can't adjust with our wife, and then we break up and we live alone. And therefore you get so many people. In this summer I was in Finland, a small country, population, total population less than half of Bombay. But it's a big country, it's like, it's probably in area as big as Maharashtra, maybe bigger in area. So anyway, I was in the temple had rented an apartment I was staying in. The apartment was very small, just one room with a tiny little bathroom on one side and a tiny little, not exactly a kitchen, because people eat out. They go to the restaurant to eat. Maybe they'll heat up some coffee or something at home. So the whole apartment building was like that. I said, it's so small. How can any family live in there? I said, people don't live in families. They live alone their whole life. They don't have any permanent friends. They just live alone. That's all. They go to work. They go to the restaurant to eat. They come home. They watch TV and they take their dog for a walk. And that's it. And that's the whole society. And guess what? It's got one of the highest suicide rates in the world. Because suicide, it's a well-known word in every Indian language. Usne suicide kiya. Everyone knows. This word has one of those Indian words which has entered the Indian vocabulary because it's become so common. Sati was one. But now it's become very common. Now, I started off this lecture talking about the bhakti ras, and now we're talking about social problems. Now, we find that in Srila Prabhupada's purports, he has discussed far more than any previous acharya about social matters. Of course, there are whole books of social guidance, the smritis, that means the Manusmriti is the most famous and authoritative. And there are many, Yajnavalkya Smriti, Narad Smriti, Vishnu Smriti, and so many. And apart from these famous Dharma Smritis, there are many which have been composed in different times and places of India. Social rules derived from Shastra of how people are to behave and interact with each other. But Srimad Bhagavatam is not on the level of this Dharma Smriti. It's on a higher level. But at the same time, it should be understood that traditionally the culture of persons who studied Srimad Bhagavatam, that was automatically there. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the social behavior that is required of human beings, it is discussed directly in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. We find Narad Muni advising Yudhishthira Maharaj, that comes in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, on the proper behavior of the different varnas and ashrams. So it is there, but it's not discussed in great detail because it's understood that the culture is already there. Formerly Srimad Bhagavatam was not discussed among barbarians and savages like the Western people or modern Indians today. If we take the word mlecha, that means a meat eater or one who doesn't follow the Vedic principles, which means almost everyone in the world today. So formerly this was discussed among people who had a very high level of culture and civilization. And that's also followed by Gauriya Vaishnavas. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the example, Swami Jai Namanile Tare Besha Gone Besha Madde Gone. He said that a woman who doesn't follow her husband, I consider a prostitute. It's very harsh language, we may say, but That was the understanding. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave a lot of guidance on social matters, because in the modern age people are very confused in these matters. And there's a lot of propaganda that the traditional way of life was wrong. Now, we find all over the world, and it's become very prominent in India now, that there's an idea being propagated that the whole history of the human race is one of men oppressing women, and women should have equal rights in all respects to do everything that men can do. But Srila Prabhupada pointed out that this is the cause. He actually said that the cause of all social problems are that women are not submissive to men, which didn't make Srila Prabhupada very popular among the people at the time. And nowadays, if you said that, you'd probably be arrested. It'd probably be a crime. In some countries, in many countries now, it's illegal to even speak anything, to say there's anything wrong, to even say that there's anything wrong with homosexuality. If you even say that, you can be arrested. Whereas 100 years ago, if you said there was anything right with homosexuality, you could be arrested. So you see how it's turned around? The same thing which was considered wrong to promote homosexuality, you would be thrown in prison for that. There's a famous case, a famous Irish, or it's famous in the Western world, famous Irish author. He was imprisoned near to London for saying that, yes, I'm a homosexual. Nowadays, if you speak against it, then it's a crime, which actually Prabhupada's books are illegal. And they're also illegal because they speak in favor of sati. Not that we're saying there should be sati, but Prabhupada is upholding the principle that a chaste woman, whoops, wait a minute, I could get thrown in prison if I repeat what's in Prabhupada's books. Anyway, I'll take the risk. Of course, Prabhupada never said it should be done in the modern age, but he said that the women, they voluntarily did that out of strong attachment to their husband. The flame of the fire was less painful to them than the separation from their husband. And as a result of that pious activity, they attained the same pious destination as their husband. So we see even today that it's quite common in South India, used to be in Bengal, or still some places in Tamil Nadu, that at Thai Pusam, the festival, the men will walk on and dance on hot coal, and they'll have hooks in their back, and they'll pull a ratam. They don't feel any pain. There's no blood. They'll put some spear through their mouth, and they won't feel anything because they're in bhav. There's not bhav, it's bhur. It's different. There's different meaning. Bhav means transcendental, and bhur means some spirit has taken over the body. So they didn't feel the pain. So anyway, the point in the sati also, they would not feel the pain because they're just, we find Haridas Thakur also, when he was beaten in 22 marketplaces, he didn't feel any pain because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered his body and took that pain, annulled that pain. So one who's on a very high level of consciousness, because their consciousness is on a higher platform, they don't perceive the pain which would normally be perceived, because that on a lower, on the bodily platform that would be perceived, but they've transcended the bodily platform. So anyway, the point is there that in social matters, the whole way of thinking has changed, and people in the modern age are very sure that this is correct, but the actual result is social chaos. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave so much instruction on social matters because he saw that even to practice Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult because people are so disturbed because they don't even understand the basic principles of human life, how to live as a civilized human being. It's very difficult to prosecute Krishna consciousness if we are simultaneously, it's not possible, if we're cultivating karma, krodhas, tata, lobhas, tasmat, etang, trayang, tyajit. The three gates to hell which should be given up are lust, anger and greed. Now the traditional Vedic system, the Varnashram system, was to help to control that karma, krodha, lobha. That people, they had material desires, but that should be regulated. Regulated by marriage and desire for wealth, fame, all this should be regulated. That if you get wealth, that should be spent for dharma, for yajna. One should give to brahmanas. One can have children, but the children, they should be trained in the principles of dharma. They should be given names like Keshav, Narayana, Padmanabha. So there's touch. All the time there'll be a touch with the spiritual. But in the modern age, the whole idea of society is, let us enjoy. And so there's marriage is simply how we can enjoy. Let me find beautiful girl. Let me, or the girl thinks, let me find a wealthy boy and we'll enjoy. But it doesn't work. Because in family life, by the nature of this material world, there are always problems. Now we see here, Shiva, Daksha, these are very great personalities. But it's the same kind of problem. It's just like they have movies or soap operas and the plot is the same all the time, because it is the same all the time in the material world also. It doesn't vary that much. Just the time, the place, the circumstance, the people changes a little bit, but it's the same thing. There's tension between husband and wife, parents and children, because again, from the beginning, in the modern age, children are trained. They get their training from the TV. Parents don't even think to train their children in anything nowadays. They have no idea what it means to train their children. So the children, they learn from the TV. Oh, you buy this, buy that. And these shopping malls are set up, like Big Bazaar is set up as an imitation. Or just here you have, what is it, Shopper's Stop? Just round the corner, huge thing came up. So these are imitation of, in the Western countries, they have these big shopping malls which are designed so that if you go, you might just be going to buy 1 kilo of potatoes. How much is a kilo of potatoes these days? 15 rupees? Huh? 5 rupees? Anyone have any idea? Who's shopping these days? 15 rupees, good guess. I didn't do shopping for a long time myself. That's in Bombay. Juhu. So you go in to spend 15 and you come out with spending 150 rupees. Because there are so many things. Oh, that looks nice, let me buy this. And especially if your children come. Because it's set up in such a way that just where you go to pay the money, they'll have the... They'll have the sweets and, I want that. Oh, I want that. And so from the very beginning, the children have the idea that the parents, their job is to provide me sense gratification whenever I want it. And it's always being pumped. You should buy this ice cream, buy this Coca-Cola, buy this, buy that, buy everything else. And the parents are also programmed by the advertisements that you make your children happy by giving them sense gratification. Whereas actually it's the parents' duty to train the children. Of course, they should give them nice food and so many things. But they also have to train their children in self-control. If they don't train them in self-control, then they'll just be barbarians. Because there's no end to material desires. And that's why in the Western world, the whole social fabric is broken down. Because even after marriage, if they bother getting married at all, the partners, they're not thinking of how we shall combine to execute dharma. They have no idea of dharma. Just simply what I can get from the wife and how the wife will satisfy me, and the wife thinks how the husband will satisfy me. After some time they quarrel and it's all over. So Srila Prabhupada taught these principles. We may think, well, you know, I came to the temple and I wanted to hear something about Krishna's intimate pastimes. Well, that will be there also. That's also discussed in different classes. But in this purport, there's a discussion of the disagreement or the bad feeling between Daksha and Lord Shiva. Of course, Lord Shiva has no bad feeling toward anyone, but he's a great devotee. But the bad feeling generated unnecessarily on the part of Daksha towards Lord Shiva, simply enviousness. And it caused a great disaster, which caused, even if he was thinking about his own good name, his own good name became very much diminished by his daughter committing the terrible act of suicide in the very sacrifice, in the sacrificial arena, which was arranged for all auspiciousness. So, why is that? Why should these things be discussed? Because they also need to be discussed. Because if we think we can live according to the ideas which are being propagated in the modern age and be Krishna conscious at the same time, it's going to be very difficult, because the whole mood of the modern age is promoting grossly and subtly that one should enjoy sense gratification to the fullest extent. Live life now. What does it matter about others? There's no sense of self-sacrifice or duty, let alone how we can sacrifice our lives in service to the Supreme Lord Krishna. And even bhakti is often taken up with the idea that what I will get in benefit for that. Mostly people take to bhakti thinking, what can I get? What will I get from it? Or now there was just Durga Puja. Is that celebrated grandly in Bombay? It's not so big here. Must be here. There was some Durga Puja. I was away. So there was some Durga Puja pandals. In Calcutta is the major place. Actually, up until 250 years ago, even in Bengal, this Durga Puja wasn't celebrated in this. It wasn't a public festival. It was a home festival. It was just one Shakta, Haranath, I can't remember his name. He made this into a public, he promoted this, and it's become a big public festival. Otherwise, there was no big public festival. It's a long history. We didn't discuss that. How this, they made it into a big festival, just like here in Maharashtra also, this Ganesh worship. That was not a big public festival here. The main religious inclination of the Marathi people was to Vitalnath. But now it's become to Ganesh. This was introduced for political reasons by Lokmanya Tilak. There was no big public ceremony for worship of Ganesh. There wasn't. Ganesh is traditionally, he's worshipped at the beginning of every puja, but there was no major puja for Ganesh himself. It's a modern invention. So people, they liked to worship Durga, Ganesh, or what is that? Dhanandehi, Yashandehi, Rupavati, Bharya Dehi. Give me this, give me that, give me so many things. And so many supposed avatars have become very popular because people think that you can get some material benefit by going to them. But actually, bhakti means Krishnarte Akila Cheshta. Everything should be done for Krishna's satisfaction. It's a completely different way of thinking to that of materialistic people who approach God, or who they consider to be God, forgetting what I can get. So the generic dharma, or the underlying principle of dharma as taught in Mahabharata, especially Ramayana, and actually throughout all the Vedic literatures, that generic dharma, it begins to instill a sense of selflessness. The people come to, they take up dharma with the idea that kangshanta karmanang sitim yajanti hadevataha. People come to the demigods because they have material desires to fulfill, and kshipram hi manushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. Very quickly their desires are fulfilled by worship of demigods, but to worship the demigods there has to be some sacrifice to even become eligible to worship the demigods. One has to follow the, especially in the, of course there are the, even the Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, they were also engaged in demigod worship. They didn't become at all, even slightly purified by doing so. But generally there are so many things. One has to give charity to the brahmanas. One has to perform some austerity, self-abnegation. So there's a beginning of understanding that my self-interest is served not by grossly indulging the senses, but there has to be some sacrifice, there has to be service of others. So that is a beginning which regulates society, and it begins to instill the sense of selflessness. Without that sense of selflessness, which is actually the essence of bhakti, unless there's a beginning of that, then how can we perform bhakti? Kam, krodh, lodh, moha, madadi, abhishta, eshabna, chari, kise pabe radha krishna. If we're completely absorbed in lust, greed, anger, etc., then where is the possibility of attaining to the service of Radha and Krishna? But then the whole modern society is promoting a social ethos. Get ahead, be a success, you can do it by your own self. It's a completely different ethos to... I've seen that not so long ago, the students in the university, they used to touch their professors' feet. Because the understanding is that knowledge, it doesn't come so much from my own effort as from satisfying the guru. But nowadays the teacher is, it's a job, that's all. He gets paid, he doesn't care for the students don't care for the teacher, and knowledge is just something, it's an acquisition. by which one wants to become in a better position to exploit others than others are in. So knowledge, instead of being for self-realization, knowledge is utilized simply for promoting one's material interest, which is not at all in one's own real self-interest. Anyway, time's up. I also have to leave. So there are many things to be... These points are so important. No doubt you may think it's not very interesting. We'd have much rather heard some nice stories about Radha Krishna Leela. But as I was saying, Prabhupada himself, he spoke about this a lot. He was very concerned with this. He wanted to institute Varnashram Dharma among his disciples because he saw that they don't know how to live as human beings. We're talking about the highest dharma, but husband and wife can't even live together peacefully. Then where's the talk about parodharma if we can't even follow aparadharma? So these points are very important. Unfortunately, I don't have time because I have to leave. I have discussed these points and what we should be aiming at, what Prabhupada wanted us to aim towards in one book I wrote called Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. The India that I have seen, and probably most of you haven't, because you're all city people. But 30 years ago I was traveling in the villages of Bengal, and how traditionally people were living life there. It's much more conducive to Krishna consciousness. One thing which was very conducive is there's no electricity. It's very good for Krishna. If you have a Krishna conscious culture, then after sundown, what happens when at sundown? No, what do people traditionally do? Does anyone know? Suryastka samay kya kane? Sonani? Huh? No, what? Light the lamp. In every home you have to light the lamp. Deep jalana hai ne? Suryastka samay. For Lakshmi. Otherwise Lakshmi won't come. So no one, one person maybe knows this. Now they only do on Deepavali, and that's also with electric lights. So, but there's no electricity, so what do the people do? They hear Ram Katha, or they do Kirtan. But nowadays, Suryaske Pahali TV Chalu Hai, Uske Baad Bhi Chalu Hai, or Do Baje Raat Ko Tak Chalu Rehta Hai, and where's the Dharma? And people, they don't get up early in the morning because they're up late watching TV, and it's hellish life. So we recommend live simply without electricity, and you'll say he's crazy. But if at the end of life, by doing so, you're in a more favorable position to remember Krishna, then that's all that really matters. You live comfortably and go to hell. What's the value? Better chant Hare Krishna. Anyway, I'd better finish because I'd really... All right, one question, then I have to go. I'm looking at my watch. You could take that with your right hand. That's called Shishtata, which Indians, they also don't know. That's insulting to take with the left hand. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, very nice class. As you were describing...
If it's a very nice class, I'm afraid. If people say it's very nice, that means they enjoy it. If you benefited from it, I hope. If you think it's nice just because you got some nice feeling out of it, that's not enough. It's really nice if you can implement in your life.
Maharaj, you were saying that Prabhupada wanted this Varnashram Dharma to be implemented very much. And you suggested at the end that it would be better that if you don't use electricity.
Not in Bombay you should use it. Here, in the preaching centers in the city. But Srila Prabhupada recommended that most of his disciples live on the land, live simply and chant Hare Krishna. Some devotees taking suggestion from me are establishing a center in South India with no electricity. They build their houses themselves from mud. It can be done. And what do? After sundown, they go, they all join the kirtan, because what else are you going to do? You don't have to have electricity. It's not required. Yeah, then what's the question?
So I heard that ISKCON devotees tried out this implementation of Varnashram Dharma, like say in farm communities, etc. But it is a failure so far, I heard like that.
Yeah, so, Prabhupada, what he said, it's a failure, it doesn't work, Prabhupada was wrong, and so give it up. Is that correct?
I didn't get you, Raj.
Yeah, that's the idea. Some people say that. Well, we tried doing farm communities and it didn't work, so Prabhupada, his suggestion was wrong, so we'll give it up. So I don't agree with that. We didn't get the formula right. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't try again. Every day we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're not seeing Krishna directly. Does that mean we should stop trying? We should have faith in the order of the Guru. Otherwise, what's the meaning?